Hey everyone, it's Mike from BadMagicPlayer.com bringing you another episode of the Bad Magic Podcast. This time we're talking about one of the most exciting aspects of playing Magic the Gathering. It's coming up this weekend. It happens every 3 months, and we get to play with a whole bunch of new cards. That's right, I'm talking about pre-releases. Dragons of Tarkir is pre-releasing this weekend, so we get some new cards, a big set, a big lore change with Sarkin going back in the past and creating a new future, Marty McFly style. But Biff still gets the sports almanac, so someone's going to pull out to be pretty rich here. But maybe it's Ugin, who knows? But anyway, I'm super stoked, super excited to play in pre-releases. It's one of those things that I always get to if I can, no matter if I'm not really playing Magic, if I'm taking a break, I always try to get to the pre-releases anyway, just because you get to play with new cards, you get to see your old friends, and everybody's just super excited, and everybody's just geared up to play Magic the Gathering. It's kind of like they say it's opening day in baseball every 3 months for Magic. In this case, it was only a month and a half, 2 months difference from the pre-releases of Fate Reforged and then upcoming here to Dragons of Tarkir. So really, we got an extra special load of pre-release action. And especially the flavor surrounding the future changes and the new block formats with Standard. And, there's so much going on here that just, like, I'm stoked. I'm ready to go. And I just can't wait for this weekend. What we're going to talk about today is I want to just talk about how pre-releases worked in the past. Like, my experiences going to pre-releases back when they were completely different from what pre-releases were today. And just sharing my experience from, 15 years ago, basically, going to big events as a new player in Magic, what I felt like, and then kind of turn into how I approach them now. I can talk about how I view new sets, how I look into playing the events, how I view new pre-releases, and just kind of going over that. And hopefully you guys can take something from that. If you've never been to a pre-release, hopefully you'll understand after this, how they work and, what you can look forward to. If you've already been to them or you're like me or you go every time, hopefully you can take something away from it where, you're going to approach it a little different this time. Or maybe you can suggest something to me to help me be a better player at these pre-release events. So let's get to it. First of all, my plans this weekend. So this is one of the few weekends I didn't have extra work to do. I don't have class. I have free time to actually devote to playing some hardcore Magic the Gathering with a new set. So my plans are on Saturday and Sunday to go to two different stores. I'm going to play in three different events and all the options I can get to weigh back and forth. I decided to do this particular plan. It's great because the way pre-releases go now, you can choose to go to different stores. There's in this area, this is Metro Detroit in Michigan. I've got, maybe eight stores I could choose from within a half an hour drive between like Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti and Livonia and just north of Detroit. Again, if you're not from Michigan, none of these cities make sense. But just imagine, half an hour drive to go to seven or eight different stores. And each store has their own setup. They have different structures, different prize supports, different costs, and obviously a different group of people to play with based on location there. So many options, infinite options for pre-releases. Like I said, there's a midnight on Friday, but I'm getting too old to stay up all night without ruining the whole week of, of trying to sleep and my sleep schedule. Night releases are pretty rough for me. So there's a few different events on Saturday and a few different events on Sunday. So you could potentially play, between 3 to 7 events, depending on the stores you found and what time you went. So many options, right? Well, in the past, it wasn't always like this. Going back before Shards of Alara, because that's when everything changed, we go way back the first, 10 years of Magic, basically, 8 to 10 years of Magic, the way they did pre-releases was they would have one big regional pre-release in about every state. And some of the bigger states like Pennsylvania and California would have two, but they were pretty far apart. And these were massive events held at like a convention center or a store like Star City level size store where you could fit, a few hundred people. And it felt like a small Grand Prix. If you've never been to a Grand Prix, you just have to imagine a giant convention center filled with tons of people. Now, it wasn't 1,000 people like Grand Prix are now, but back in you know, 2001, 1999, those eras, having 150 people play Magic in one room, that was crazy. That was like giant, you know, nuts, giant pile of people, right? People would drive 4 to 6 hours to go play Magic for a pre-release. And, you know, you just get this big event feeling every time you go to play with a new set. And now pre-releases were held 2 weeks before the set actually launched. So it was even more special to go to these big events because not only were they huge and you got to play in giant main events with 200 people and try to win a case of the new set before it even comes out, but you had 2 whole weeks of the cards in your hand before you could actually buy them. You know, but this is, you know, getting a little bit ahead of the time before eBay was really big and it was, you know, you couldn't just dump the cards online right away like you could. Like, you know, you put a listing saying, in hand, I've got it now, you know, I got it from the pre-release and ship it out. This was like, you had cards before anybody else could buy them, and that was insane, right? So you were trying to get all the cards you could possibly can, you know, before it actually was out. Now we only have a week between pre-release and release, and so many events are held for the pre-release that, you know, it's almost pretty easy to get cards that you want before the date the set actually goes on the shelves. So anyway, you have these giant pre-release, regional pre-releases, and the first one I went to was Mirrodin. So that's like 2002 or 2001, I think, somewhere around that area. Anyway, I was still in high school, and I was just, you know, really getting into Magic. I started about late Urza's block, but, you know, I just played casually, and I didn't really get into it until Onslaught block, going to my first GP. It was Onslaught block constructed at Grand Prix Detroit in 2001, 2002. Again, I can't remember exactly the year. But going to that, you know, that was going to the Grand Prix was like amazing. And I'm like, what can I do to get even better Magic stuff, right? So I was told about the pre-release, you know, went to the regional pre-release in Michigan, which was held at Pandemonium in Livonia or Garden City, whatever they're calling that little town now, which was a huge store. Like, they had 3 different rooms. They're still around now, but they're much bigger. They had 3 rooms dedicated to just playing cards, tables everywhere, right? So you'd go, and there was a main event, and, you know, there was, like, maybe 150 people in the main event, and you'd pay, you know, $25 or whatever it was then to get your packs. And they had these cool tournament packs back then where you would get a box, a little box that basically held 3 boosters worth of cards. You'd get 45 cards randomly, and you know, 3 rares, 9 uncommons, and the rest commons. So basically, you had a little box. The tournament pack was a little box of just 3 boosters randomly in there, and then a bunch of land. But the cool thing is, you had this little box. So when you could, after you sleeved up your deck for sealed, you could put their leftovers in the little box and carry it around. It was pretty neat. But they got rid of those too around Shards of Alara, or a little bit after that. Might have been like M10 or whatever it was. So you could play in the main event, which was a sealed deck, you know, 100 to 200 people, and the winner would get, like, a case of the new set. And you'd go down to, like, top 64. So if you could just do, like, better than 50%, you'd get, like, 3 or 4 packs, and it was, like, the best thing ever because you got packs of the new set you couldn't get for 2 weeks. So, you know, that was kind of the draw to that. So you could play in the main event, and then they also had tons of side events. And that was back when you could do drafts and sanction drafts. So they did booster drafts on site, usually. All the way up until, like, the Lorwyn block, I think they did drafts. Because I know you could do, like, Dissension and Ravnica block drafts at some places. But for the most part, you could draft, you could do a sealed main event, and you could do sealed flights. And the flights were basically 16-person events where you play 4 rounds of Swiss, and then depending on your record, that's how you would get prizes. And if you went 4-0, you got about half of a box. You know, like 16 to 20 booster packs, depending on who was running the event. So you had all these opportunities to play. You could go there and just play flights for the 2 days, the Saturday and Sunday. You could just play all weekend and just play, you know, 4 or 5 full-round events and try to get as many booster packs as you could in prize. Or you could play in the main event, which took all day Saturday, and then there was a second one on Sunday. You know, so you had so many options, but they were still huge events. And again, you know, luckily I live within a half an hour of where that place was, where the pre-release was held. So I just had to drive there each day. But, you know, if you live far away, you drive the 4 or 5 hours there, you know, and play. There's some pros and cons about that style. I mean, obviously, we've moved away from that. You know, Wizards kind of felt, they kind of expanded to stores more than these regional aspects of tournament play for pre-releases. So some of the pros that I saw with the old style is that, well, one is you see people you haven't seen in a long time. I knew there were some people that would come to play at the Michigan regional pre-release each time, and I would only see them at those pre-releases because they drove the 8 hours from the Upper Peninsula. People would drive all the way down from up there to come play Magic at the pre-release. And so you'd see them, and it's fun to hang out with them. That you never would hang out with them now, because they live so far away, right? The other thing is, you get this convention feeling. You know, it's like a big event, like a Grand Prix, 100 plus people. Where if you play at your local store now, you've got maybe 10 to 20 people, sometimes maybe up to 50 people, depending on where you play. You know, you would go to this giant convention. It'd be a big tournament. And it would just be so exciting because there's so many people there. And then the other thing is you could just binge on Magic a lot more. Those flights allowed you to just get from one event to another, do a draft, do a seal, do another draft, do another seal, and just binge on new card Magic all weekend, right? Where now, depending on the store and your options, you might only have one sealed a day, you know, and you can't draft anymore. So, you know, some of those were, it was a little bit better for those kind of things back then. But on the cons, and again, these are kind of the issues that Wizards addressed when they changed the system, as I'll get to in a minute. But the travel, you know, having to drive 4 to 5 hours to get to one if you just happen to live in a space that wasn't close to where pre-release was being held. Access, again, if you were a young player, like I said, I got lucky that I lived really close to the pre-release location. And it was always in that same little area in southeastern Michigan in the Metro Detroit area. But had I lived, you know, a couple hours north, you know, there's no way at that time as a high school kid I was going to drive out there and play. You know, like it wouldn't even exist in my mind. So kind of with that, it was meant for more hardcore players and people who had more resources to commit to playing Magic on even a most casual level. Like if you were a tabletop player and you didn't live nearby, you probably didn't go to pre-releases because it just didn't make sense. You know, what happened though, they had the release events, or they later called them launch parties, but those were the events that later stores could run, like kind of the Friday Night Magic style before they called it Friday Night Magic, that those would be the ones that you would go to if your local store. You know, they weren't as cool as the pre-releases, but at least you got to play with the stuff, like have a draft like when it comes out, you know, or they would do a sealed on that Saturday after the event, after the set released. So then, Shards of Alara, I believe, was the first set that they changed the way pre-releases went. You know, we just went over the cons of the old style and how it didn't, you know, those were the drawbacks. And Wizards really took consideration of those and created their new style when they tried to expand and successfully expanded their organized play policies and network. I think the Wizards Play Network was created and they did basically a lot of outreach to bring stores, local game stores of all sizes, into the event organizing network, basically. So, with Shards of Alara, stores everywhere could host events, you know, assuming they had a certain level of activity and sales in terms of the Wizards Play Network and that kind of thing. So you could find a store pretty much anywhere nearby to go and play a pre-release. You know, that's when they also changed it, so pre-releases would be only a week between the pre-release and the release, less time, and then also they created the launch party idea so that there would be like 2 weekends of awesome. But really, as long as you made it to the launch party, that was good. You know, so, and they still gave, you know, they kept some of the important parts, the fun parts of the old way. Like you still got a promo card and we still get those now, although they change them up. They change up the format every set to be a different kind of promo. Like now we get a choice of promos based on which Dragon Lord you pick and Dragons of Tarkir. But for the most part, the basic structure is there where, you know, it's a chance to play with cards a week before they come out on the shelves. And you can find stores anywhere to do it, which is great. So it increases the access so that anybody can go. It also increased the choice. You know, if you want to play a four-round event, you don't have a lot of time, you can find a store that's probably doing a couple four-round events. So you're able to do a small tournament and then get out of there. Or if you want to go play for high stakes, for boxes, like a lot of places in Ann Arbor in Michigan have where top eight will get a box because it will get 100 people. But it's like seven rounds. If you want to play that kind of main event style, you can still do that. It's not as big as it used to be because there's more stores pulling from the available player base, but you have those options, right? So in general, you lose the grandness and the big size convention feeling, but you get more access. It's cheaper. You're getting access to more players around the area that might not otherwise go to an event. It's good for the game, right? It's good for the game. It's good for the players. You know, it's a lot different if you played back then because, you know, like I said, I loved going to these big events, but I was privileged enough to be nearby where the place was. And if, you know, if I wasn't, I wouldn't have gone, and this whole thing, I wouldn't have even known what the past experience was like. So it's good in general. It's just, if you're an old player like me, you just kind of miss the nostalgic aspect of it. But overall, it's a good thing, right? So now you're able to go, like I said, I've got two different stores I can go to this weekend. I'm going to two different stores. I'm going to play in three different events. So I'll be able to really experience the new set where, you know, if I would have played the old style, I'd only get to pick one thing, play in the one main event, you know, if I wanted to play big and not experience as much. But I'd get to play with, 100, 200 players. Actually, now these regional events would probably be 500 players. It'd be like the size of the Star City Opens. But again, instead of 500 people playing right now in one event, you'd get thousands and thousands and thousands of players playing all over the country and all over the world, right? So it's good for the game. More people playing is good for Magic. It's good for cards. And of course, you can go on eBay and buy all the cards you want before they even come out, because players have them in hand from what they've opened in the pre-release pools and prize packs, right? So it's good for everybody in the thing. It's just some nostalgia that we're missing out on. Let's talk about how I approach pre-releases now, right? Even though some of the events aren't huge, where you're not playing for cases as much as you used to be, there's still plenty of events you can go to that, at least the ones I go to, where, you know, it's a pretty competitive event, even for a pre-release, because you're playing for prizes like a whole box of booster packs. You know, like you can play top eight at some of the events that I go to, you'll get a box or even more than a box of boosters in the new set. So you're playing for some serious prizes, right? Like a chance to get so many cards before they come out. And as you know, some of these mythic rares are $50 plus as a pre-order. You're getting a lot of money saved by being able to open more cards, especially if you want to play constructed. So basically I have like three main steps to how I take my approach, right? So the first is I select the venue, right? I got to figure out where I'm going to go, what's my schedule, you know, the logistics, basically. So I look at, you know, which of my friends are going to go where. And, you know, I try to go to the places where more of my friends are playing. Because, again, part of this is, the fun of this is playing with new cards with old friends. At least that's part of my motivation for playing in the pre-releases. And then I evaluate the prize structure and the tournament versus how it's set up, who's running it, and how much it costs. You know, if I know of a store that's kind of slow at running their events, and they don't really have good price support, and it costs more than an average price of entry, you know, or it's going to be a long day, and you're not really playing for much, or you're playing for too much, and there's not enough chance to really win anything for the cost, you know, it's very top-heavy price support, then, you know, I might not be as excited to go to that store versus a store that has their structure lined up with more of what I'm looking for. And also, I look at how many events the stores are holding. You know, what's their schedule like? Because ultimately, I want to go and play with as many of the new cards as I can. So I'm looking at how many events can I squeeze into the weekend, right? So this week, I found one store that's doing two events on Saturday, one at like 10 o'clock in the morning and the other around 6 o'clock at night. You know, that's enough time. We'd be able to do both of those events on Saturday. And then I get to go to another store where one of my friends, a couple of my friends run the store, and a lot of my friends play there. So I'm going to go there on Sunday to play one event, to be able to play with my friends, you know, support my friend's store, and have a better time there. So two different stores, two different motivations and structures and the schedule, but I'm able to fit in three good events, play with lots of Dragons and Tarkir, and have a good time with friends, right? That's the goal. I'm achieving those goals. So step one is, you know, the logistics, selecting the venue and maximizing the fun based on what you can pick. The second is preparing for the set, right? Looking at the new cards and kind of getting an idea of what's coming. Now, some people like to be totally surprised and don't look at the spoilers. They try to put themselves in the bubble, to use a sports term, to not see what's going on, right? But some of these events, you know, they've got good prize structures on the line. And to maximize what I'm going to get out of playing with the cards, like to understand what they could do in standard, what they could do in draft, and just get a better understanding of the cards themselves from a more competitive standpoint, I want to have a basis for what I could get in my pools. And the way I do this is I study the visual spoiler on the Magic website, look through all the cards and kind of just identify, like, well, what kind of cards do we have here? You know, what are the combat tricks? What colors have better commons? Are there any mechanics? Like, well, you know, the mechanics that are there, are there any commonalities or anything I should know about them? Like, for example, in Khans of Tarkir, all of the morphs, they would all trade with each other. So, they would never get more than two toughness or be able to be, you know, stopped by themselves until you had five mana. So if you think about cards like, there's a red, I can't remember the name, but there's like a red morph that, you put it down for 3 mana as a 2-2, and it flips up to become a 5-2 for 4 mana, right? Well, the 5-2 on turn 4 still trades with a 2-2. They both, you know, with a morph, they'll kill each other. But say you have the Abzan Guide, I think it's called, the 4-4 lifelink. For you can flip them up for 2 mana and then a black, a white, and a green, right? That's a 4-4 lifelink warrior. That costs 5 mana. That would not trade with a 2-2 morph. You know, it costs 5 mana. He'd flip over, it just crushed that 2-2. So knowing with that, Khans of Tarkir, you could know you could attack a morph into another morph up until turn 5 without fear of... On the other hand, if the opponent has a spell or a trick, you know, that's different. But in terms of, if everybody's tapped out and you have a 2-2 morph and they have a 2-2 morph, if they only have four mana or less and they have that guy and they don't have any cards in hand, you're going to be able to trade the 2-2 for the 2-2, if that makes sense. The same thing, so looking at the visual spoiler for Dragons of Tarkir, you can see the same thing applies with Megamorphs. No Megamorphs trade until at least 5 mana are on the table. They all become 2 toughness creatures, even with the counter on it. There's a rare, like a 2-1 flyer, that counters a spell or a creature spell when it flips up with Megamorph, but it then becomes a 3-2 on turn that for 2 mana, right? So even if on turn 4 they can flip it up, it's still going to be killed by the morph without any other spell to support it. So Megamorphs, looking at the visual spoiler and seeing key concepts and looking at some conclusions you can make about the set, I can predict that if I have a morph and they have a morph and it's only turn 4, I can trade with that morph if they don't have a combat trick. So that's important to know as you look through this. You look for things like that. You know, how much does it cost for removal? In this set, there's a lot of 2-mana removals. In previous sets, there's been a lot of 3-mana removals. So knowing what's available in a set, you can know when you're building your pool. You know, you're not going to memorize every card in the set unless you're really, really studying hard, and it's not really worth that for the time, but you can really kind of get a sense of, like, well, what do I have to worry about? You know, what's that common? How many commons are able to remove cards that I have? You know, how many commons can overpower my morphs, that kind of thing? And how many common instant combat tricks are there? Things like that will help you be successful in the pre-releases, even without knowing every card that's there. And then I also listen to podcasts and read articles and reviews on how to play with the new set in Limited. You know, you're looking at what pros think. Now, pros can be wrong too, but if you get a sense of what they're thinking, you're going to be able to analyze cards better yourself. You know, there's a lot of cards that look like they're good and they're actually quite terrible. And there's a lot of terrible cards that look terrible that are actually quite good. And listening to what pros think, a couple cards will stand out and you'll be like, oh, well, that's actually pretty good. And you might not have looked at it before. So that's important. So basically step two is I prepare for the new cards and get ready for the new set so I have a basis to build my pool and kind of see what's going to happen in the games. And then the third step's easy. Get my supplies ready, you know, make sure I pre-register. If you've not been to a pre-release before, sometimes it's good to pre-register. In the cases where we have these selections of what pool you're going to get, you know, what promo. This time we're picking Dragon Lords to follow. So if you want to get the Salamgar, the Black Blue pool, the promo or a pool that's related, you know, that you're mostly going to get Black Blue cards, you know, you might want to call ahead because some people might really want that and it might sell out and you'll just get a random one. So sometimes pre-registration is really good. Plus you don't have to worry about the money transaction the day of. And sometimes if you go to a store with a lot of people, you'll have to wait in line and it takes forever. And you could just be playing EDH or some other game with your friends while you wait for the tournament to start instead. And then in general, I make sure I have dice, a good playmat that I like, and, you know, life total, paper and pens, anything you need, you know, morph tokens for this one and manifest tokens if you want them to have, you know, things like supplies. You're just ready for whatever the cards can make. So I'm super excited for the pre-release this weekend. It's Monday as we record this, so I'm counting down the days to Saturday morning. I'm just super stoked, and I just can't wait to bust out some Dragons of Tarkir. The set looks great. The flavor is awesome. Who knows if Control looks like it's going to be coming back with a vengeance. It's already pretty good, but with cards like Anticipate and the blue-white stuff like the Dragon, Ojutai, and Narset, the Planeswalker, it looks like there's a lot of room for Control to just completely dominate. Although a lot of people are expecting dragons like Stormbreath Dragon and some of the Planeswalkers and the red-green wedges to be a lot stronger than before, too. So we'll just have to see and wait and see. And in the meantime, just really enjoy pre-releases. You know, they're fun. They can be a little competitive. But it's all about playing with new cards and understanding what these cards do so that you're able to take them to the next level when you play them in a constructed deck or when you start drafting after next week. So thank you, everybody, for listening to the Bad Magic Podcast and checking out badmagicplayer.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at badmagicplayer. If you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like to see in the future, you can tweet me on there at badmagicplayer or send me an email at badmagicplayer@gmail.com. All right, take care, everybody, and good luck on the pre-releases.